FM News Talk 97.1. On demand audio.
If you ban them in the future, the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size. If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
Put that double barrel shotgun and fire two blasts outside the house.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
This is 2A Tuesday, brought to you by the Range St. Louis West.
All right, glad you're back with us. So I want to welcome in our guest, Amy Schwerer. She's a legal policy analyst at the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at Heritage. And Amy, welcome into the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, great to have you this morning. You know, this story caught my attention yesterday, and I told Tricia, I said, we need to find out what the implications are of this New Jersey law being upheld by a federal court that basically says it's okay for New Jersey to limit magazine capacity.
It looks like there are going to be a number of immediate ramifications, including now a large number of lawful gun owners in the state of New Jersey are essentially either going to have to personally modify their magazines to comply with the law or see them confiscated or otherwise get rid of them, or else they're going to be felons under the law. And it's quite unfortunate because it really is not going to save lives or to reduce gun violence in any meaningful way. But at the same time, it is likely going to make felons of a large number of otherwise law-abiding citizens.
Are you suggesting that criminals will ignore this ruling?
Well, I'll tell you what, even if every single criminal were to comply with this ruling, congratulations, they now have 10 rounds and multiple magazines, and you've added a couple seconds for them to reload. So it's really just absurd, kind of on its face, that this is going to be the measure with which they're going to dramatically reduce gun violence.
Yeah, so this was a 2-1 ruling in an appeals court, and effectively what they did was deny an effort by one of the gun rights groups for a temporary injunction. They just wanted the thing to prevent it from going into effect as it continues to be appealed, right?
Right. So basically, this allows the law to get the ban itself to go into effect, meaning that even as law-abiding gun owners continue to challenge this, if they don't comply with it by the deadline, which I think has either now passed or is coming up pretty soon here, they are going to be essentially felons, even if ultimately on the merits the case is overturned, or the law, the statute is struck down.
Yeah.
So it's, again, it's just what happened is, so even though they struck down, or they denied the temporary injunction, it involves analyzing whether or not these judges think that the case is likely to succeed on the merits. So essentially what they said was, we don't think that, when we look at this on the merits, we're going to strike it down as unconstitutional. So no, we're not going to keep it from going into enforcement.
Yeah, their stated reason for the ban was because they believe it would thwart mass shooters if they have to stop and reload. But I wonder, when people write legislation like this, does it not dawn on them that ship has sailed, because the magazines still exist? You can pretend that there aren't 15-round magazines out there, but, for example, I'm not even quite sure how I'd modify it, but I have owned in the past a 40 caliber handgun that holds 16 rounds in the magazine and one in the chamber. Right. It's specifically designed to have a thicker grip on this gun to handle that magazine. I would assume you would have to go then buy a magazine that was designed to fit that same pistol or handgun, but would be modified to only hold 10 rounds or less.
That's correct. Or you would have to purchase a gun that is only meant to hold 10 rounds or fewer, which deprives law-abiding gun owners of a large number of very, very popularly used handguns that are used for law-abiding reasons across the country. So it's hard for me to read this opinion and find the logic in it. Because on the one hand, the two judges in the majority make the argument that, oh, well, if potential mass shooters have to reload more often, well, it's going to significantly thwart them to make this law meaningful. But on the other hand, if law-abiding gun owners have to reload repeatedly in a situation where they're having to defend themselves or others, well, that's not a significant, you know, an infringement on their rights. But you get one or the other. Either it meaningfully, you know, reduces someone's ability to reload and to fire, or it doesn't. You know, it doesn't change whether or not it's for lawful purposes. So,
true. We're talking to Amy Swear. She's a legal policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. You know, another situation that I read about yesterday that surprised me a little bit, and I see all of these as cases where it emboldens the anti-gun activists across the country to take similar steps. The New York Senate has introduced a bill that the governor supports that would require a $1 million liability insurance policy for all gun owners. If you own a gun, you would have to secure $1 million liability policy, or you would be in violation of the law.
You know, the sad thing is that is not even close to the most illogical gun law that has been proposed in New York recently. but you know, more than anything, laws like that, all it does is make it harder for low-income individuals, people who don't have the means necessarily to purchase those insurance policies, because, of course, well-off people are going to be able to purchase those insurance policies. They're going to be able to then have guns on them in compliance with the law. And really, all this does is make it harder for individuals who are low-income, who are more likely than individuals who are high-income, to live in dangerous neighborhoods and to need that protection for their home, because they don't, you know, have the means to install 24-hour gated security or anything like that.
Well, maybe... No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I mean, that was just to conclude the thought. I mean, really, what these added laws do is really just make it harder for the individuals who are more than likely to need those guns to actually possess them legally.
Maybe they should add some language in there allowing them to offer group rates for gangs.
because of course the gangs are going to comply with
right, because criminals aren't going to, the people that are going to commit these crimes don't care about such nonsense. Every story we do on gun rights, these crazy gun bills, it all gets back to the same issue. The only person you're penalizing is the law-abiding citizen who went through the background check to legally buy the weapon in the first place.
You know, again, it's just so hard to read these opinions because there's just this solid lack of logic to the reasoning and the analysis of some of these judges in upholding these laws. And it really does. You know, I love the dissent in this case. It's a brilliant dissent. And he points out, rightfully so, that all this is doing is watering down the Second Amendment into this sort of, redheaded stepchild of the Bill of Rights that, oh, well, it's in there and we kind of have to put up with it, but we're going to water it down until it's, you know, sort of this second class right. We would never think of doing something like this to the First Amendment or to really any other, you know, enumerated right. But here we are with the Second Amendment saying, oh, well, this isn't really going to change anything. It's just going to make it harder for law-abiding gun owners. But let's do it.
It's just amazing. Every week there are more examples of it. Amy Swear, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it.